Morning. Tim Burkett, our guiding teacher, was scheduled to talk today, but he was sick this week, so I'm subbing for him. And I was kind of happy to have the opportunity because in June we did Tim and I did a retreat together, and we led a retreat together. And on the weekdays, I gave the talks, and then on the weekend, he did. So I gave three talks on the Metta Sutra, the Loving Kindness Sutra, during the week. And since then, I've always wanted the opportunity to put those three down into one Sunday talk and give that talk, because I love the sutra. So that's what I did for today. This is a sutra that we chant here on Saturday mornings during our Saturday service, and it's a much beloved sutra around the world, and it contains a practice that can change your life. It really can. So I want to start out by reading it. I want everybody to read it, not chant it. We'll just recite it together. Does everybody have a copy? Okay. Metta Sutra. This is what should be done by those who are skilled in goodness and who know the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. So the origins of the Metta Sutra go back to the early Pali Sutras, and there's also a commentary by Buddhaghosa, who was a 5th century Indian commentator and translator, that gives the mythological historical origins of it. And according to his commentary, it originally was written as an antidote to fear. And I want to quickly tell you sort of the short version of the story because I really like it. So according to his commentary, there were 500 of Buddha's monks who were going to do a 3-month retreat somewhere. So they hiked out and they went a couple of hundred miles from where the Buddha had been staying. And in the foothills of the Himalayas, they found a beautiful grove of trees. And they decided this would be the perfect place to do their retreat. So they each picked a tree, and they were going to sit down and meditate day and night underneath these trees. But what they didn't know was that this grove was the home of the tree deities. And the tree deities had built a celestial palace that was held up by these trees. And so the monks were sitting under each tree that a tree deity lived in. So they were kind of barging in. And the tree deities were really happy to have them for a few days. They thought, this will be, you know, this will be wonderful. You know, we'll have these monks. It'll be very serene. But as the days went by, the tree deities started getting kind of antsy to get their places back. And when they found out that the monks planned to be there for 3 months, they went, we got to get these guys out of here. So they got together, and what they decided to do was to scare them. So they you're sitting in our homes. You know, they decided that they were going to give them terrifying visions and terrifying noises. So I think they were Midwestern tree deities. They couldn't just take the direct route. Very passive-aggressive tree deities, if you ask me. So that's what they did, and the monks were terrified and didn't know how to handle it, so they decided to go back to Buddha and ask him what to do. So they walked a couple hundred miles back to where Buddha was staying, told him about it, and Buddha told them that he would give them a sutra that would both be a theme for meditation and a formula for protection for them. So they walked back the couple of hundred miles. The whole way they were chanting the sutra. And as they approached the grove, the tree deities heard them and were very moved by the sutra and invited the monks to stay. And then they looked after the monks and they fed them and they kept the forest very quiet so that their meditation would be very strong. And all of the monks attained the pinnacle of spiritual perfection. So that's the story. I want to remind you that next week we're going to Hokkyoji, which is a monastery in southern Minnesota. I don't know if there are tree deities there, but it can be very quiet. Wanda's going to feed us. Ben's going to take care of us. So you never know what might happen. So anyway, that's the story. Metta, the definition of metta is, it's usually translated as loving kindness. Another translation I've heard that I really like is loving friendliness. And that loving kindness extends to everybody in the world, including the one person that we usually forget, which is ourselves. And it promotes feelings of interconnection, of being connected to all other beings. It's not just an intellectual exercise. It's a real body kind of exercise. It's body and it's heart. And it conditions our attitudes and our outlook and our conduct in a way that an intellectual understanding of the practice wouldn't do. You know, just a head understanding of something isn't going to transform your life. But if you do it as a body practice and a heart practice, it can heal us from that delusion of being separate from everyone else and bring that kind of healing into the world. So, loving kindness is a lifetime practice. It's something that we continue to work on for our entire lives. We're always developing it. You know, it's not like we go, oh, got that one down, you know. Now on to compassion and generosity, right? We're always working on it. And it's a real start where you are kind of practice. So you don't have to start out naturally being a loving kind of a person. I read an interview a long time ago now. It was one of the last interviews that John Lennon did before he died. And he was talking about, you know, in the last 10 years or so of his life, he did a lot of work around peace, and he was always talking about peace. And he was talking about that in this interview, and he said, you know, I'm always talking about peace because I've always been a really angry guy. And he said, I've been a violent guy. And he said, and that's why I needed to transform that. And I've done that by talking about peace and working for peace. And loving kindness practices like that. It's transformative. I want to go line by line through the sutra. There are three parts to this sutra, and I've divided it up on your sheet so that you can see clearly what they are. The first part is a description of the qualities that we want to cultivate in order to develop or increase our loving kindness. And the second part is our wishes for others. And then the third part of it is the practice element of the sutra. So it starts out, this is what should be done by those who are skilled in goodness. I forgot to say this. I'm going to talk mostly about how this applies to us now, because that's what I'm personally most interested in. But I'm also going to talk about the original commentaries and what this was supposed to be for the monks, because I think it's interesting and it gives us a historical perspective that's helpful. So one who is skilled in goodness is someone who knows what should be done and what shouldn't be done. Originally, this was talking about the monks following the Vinaya, or the rules for the monks. For lay people, I think good training in becoming skilled in goodness might include working on the precepts and the Eightfold Path, Bodhisattva vows, you know, any of those kind of divine abodes, any of those kind of training practices that we have in Buddhism. One who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Now, in some translations, this is translated those who wish to attain nirvana. So, that's all of us, right? The purpose of the Dharma is to end suffering. And the path of peace is the path that leads to that, or it's the Eightfold Path. That's the path that you follow. If I wanted to live my life as if I were a Buddha already, or if I want to become a Buddha, that's your roadmap, the Eightfold Path. So when they're talking about the path of peace, that's what that is. Let them be able and upright. So for able, you know, any time we want to develop any kind of new understanding, we have to we want to develop any kind of ability. We have to do some training and some practice. And upright means being completely honest with ourselves about everything, about our speech and about our action. We have to be completely honest, even in our thoughts. You know, when greed, hatred, and ignorance arise, we can observe them and be really honest about what we see there. And if we can do that, it helps us maybe not act on them. You know, everybody has these thoughts and these emotions that arise, but we don't have to act on them. Straightforward and gentle in speech. Notice that it's straightforward and gentle, not straightforward or gentle. I think that there's a tendency these days to go for the straightforward and forget about the gentle. Yeah, it doesn't say straightforward and or brutal in speech. So, and also to think about when not to speak. You know, if we can't come up with a gentle way to be straightforward, maybe we refrain until we can. So straightforward and gentle in speech. Humble and not conceited. Now, in a lot of the translations, this text includes obedient and easy to instruct. And the commentary, you know, for the monks, right? The commentaries talk about receiving admonishment meekly. And they actually give a little script for what you can say when you've been criticized by someone. You can receive that criticism open-heartedly. And so this was what they suggested that the monks could say when somebody criticized them. It is good, Venerable One. Thank you for telling me. It is difficult to see one's own faults. Please tell me if you see any such fault in me again, out of compassion for me. So, you can try that. I like the part about, tell me if you see any such fault in me again, out of compassion for me. Because if people don't tell you, you're not going to know. You're not going to be able to make changes in your lives. So it's a compassionate thing. And it's sort of a revolutionary way to approach humility and receiving constructive criticism. But to get that kind of response when you are giving someone else constructive criticism, by the way, you're giving them the constructive criticism in a way that is straightforward and gentle in speech, and that will help them, other people, accept that more easily. Contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways. So a monk who was contented was considered to be easy to support. You know, they would go out on their begging rounds, and they needed to be easy to support. Now, this might be the most un-American line in this sutra. You know, we not only have a lot of stuff, but, you know, we're restless, and we're busy, and we're overactive, and we don't do moderation and self-restraint so well, I don't think. So that's a hard one for us, I think, living in this society that we've been raised in. Peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful. In our meditation, we learn to control the senses, and when we do that, when we meditate, especially in longer retreats, as we control the senses, we can kind of calm down, we can quiet down. We haven't been bombarding our senses with, you know, music and talk and stuff and stuff. And so when we do that, our wise and skillful nature can emerge, because we haven't been, you know, distracted all the time. Not proud and demanding in nature. So again, you can see where this could be a problem for a monk who's relying on other people for their daily meals. And it's also a problem for us, you know, when we meet other people who are like that. I think arrogance is just about the hardest thing to take in somebody else. And also we can take up the practice of watching for it in ourselves, you know, so that even inadvertently we don't seem to be proud and demanding or arrogant in our nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. So earlier we talked about accepting criticism with an open heart, and now it's going even further, you know, telling the monks, you know, don't do the slightest thing. So the behavior needs to be impeccable. Impeccable. This is the "what would Buddha do" line in the sutra. I want a bracelet. So that's the first part, the qualities that we want to cultivate in order to develop loving kindness. And part two is our wishes for others. And here's where the practice starts to come in. When we are chanting or reciting these lines, we should be trying to cultivate sincere thoughts of loving kindness. I mean, really kind of bring this into our bodies and pay attention to the words that we are chanting. And also to remember that we all want these things. Everybody on earth wants these things. It's something that brings us all together. Even if you can't find anything else in common with anybody, everybody wants the qualities that we're talking about in part two. So it starts out, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to be free from anxiety and from fear. You know, it's our basic wish in life. We all have people in our lives that are hard to love, either people, you know, that we interact with, or maybe public figures that are hard to love. And this is a good mantra for when we're finding it hard to love someone else. You know, we can say to ourselves, just like me, this person wants to be happy. Just like me, this person wants to be free from fear. So take a second and think about the person who you dislike most in your life, or, you know, who you see on TV or something. And just think, could I do that? Could I say, this person just wants to be happy, just like me? They want to be free from fear. I was thinking about this week with the guy who wanted to burn the Quran. I had to do a little loving kindness practice around that this week. Just wants to be happy, just like me. Wants to be free from fear. Right? Whatever living beings there may be. Now, the original Pali text says, breathing things, those that have come into existence, all beings without exception, whatever beings there may be existing anywhere in the universe. So even the creatures that we don't have any idea about are included in this. We have to go beyond our usual thinking. You know, this includes microbes. This includes those fish that live down at the bottom of the ocean that nobody ever sees. You know, you take this much further out than the beings that we usually think about.
And other planets,
that's right. This is throughout space and time. People that we, you know, people, creatures, beings that we can't even imagine. So, whether they are weak or strong, some of the commentaries imply that it's talking here about the seekers and the ones who have attained something, or people who are carrying defilements of the mind, those would be the weak ones, versus people who have few defilements. I think that's probably not up, you know, that's not ours to decide who has defilements of the mind and who doesn't. But no matter how you look at it, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally, morally, we're hoping the best for people who are weak or strong. And we include everybody. And we particularly include ourselves in this one when we're feeling weak, when we're feeling just like we can't do whatever it is we need to do right now. Metta Sutra is a wonderful thing to say for yourself at times like that. Omitting none, this is stressed over and over and over again in metta practice. In metta practice, it's the boundlessness of our concern. It goes everywhere. Everywhere. The great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen. So it's all manner of living beings, whether they are great or small. So, you know, don't leave out the queen and movie stars and, you know, people who, you know, don't leave Donald Trump out of this because he has some kind of God existence going. And also, when we go to Hokkyoji during tick season, don't leave the ticks out of this. The ticks are creatures too. There are no ticks at Hokkyoji in September. We're going a week from Tuesday? There aren't any ticks there then, so I want to remind everybody of that. But even so, we include the ticks in our wishes. And traditionally, this includes non-human realms also. So you include your hungry ghost in this. You include your neighbor's hungry ghost in this. You can include the tree deities in this if you want. So we don't even stop at creatures that we can detect. Traditionally, this would include mythological creatures too. Those living near and far away. This is a particularly good practice for when we hear about disasters. You know, we hear about the flood in Pakistan, we hear about earthquakes in Chile and the tsunami and things like that. Those things happen. You know, there's slaughters that go on in countries that we aren't even really quite sure where that country is, but we hear about it. And when those kind of disasters happen, we feel so helpless. We feel so helpless. And a good practice to do at that time is to remind yourself that there are people just like me in the middle of that. There are people who are worried about finding their kids, finding their parents, finding their families. There are people just like me. Remind yourself this isn't the other that this is happening to. And it opens our heart, and it also hopefully opens us up to trying to do something about it, trying to give in some way to help them. Because we know that could be us. That could be us. Those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. People make hard and sometimes heartbreaking decisions, and we send metta to everybody involved. In the traditional version, this included arhats who had completed their cycle of rebirths, or it could also include people who were seeking rebirth. So that was the original interpretation of that one. Let none deceive another. You can't deceive others while having loving kindness for them. It just, those two just don't go together. So if you think that you're going to tell a little white lie to spare them or to help them in some way, I would say look into your motives there. Because deceit and loving kindness just are oil and water. They don't go together. Or despise any being in any state. This is the Mother Teresa line. You know, Mother Teresa was famous for this. She'd find somebody lying out by the side of the road, and she did not care how they got there. You know, she didn't stoop over and say, have you been abusing drugs, or were you, you know, did you get thrown out of your family because you did something? You know, she didn't care. She just helped them. She just helped them. The important thing is that they need your help. So, no despising any beings in any state for any reason. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. This one reminds me of little kids, you know. I wish you'd turn into a big bug and I'd stomp on you. It's a real kind of immature thing to do. You get mad and you wish something bad would happen to them. The adult version of this is, I hope they fire him. You know, get him out of here. So, you know, there are lots of different ways that we do this. And with this one, here's a practice to try. To when you're really angry with somebody, instead of wishing them ill will, you can just say to yourself, I am so angry. I am so angry. What I need right now is some compassion and loving kindness for myself and for this anger that I'm feeling, so that I can, right in the middle of this anger, refrain from acting out of it. And if you just stop and take that breath and remind yourself of that in the heat of anger, you have a way better chance of not doing or saying something really harmful. So those are the wishes for others. And the third part is the practice. There's a practice around metta or loving kindness that is talked about in this third part. So it starts out, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. So this one really brings it home, I think. You know, it's one thing to say to yourself, I have boundless love for all living beings. And it's another thing entirely to think about, stop and think for a second, of the person that you love most in this world. Got it? Got one? The person you love most in this world. And the instruction here is that you should have that same depth and breadth of love for all beings. So this is big instruction. This is big. Eventually, the commentaries say that if we're able to do this, if we're able to remind ourselves, if we're even, you know, I mean, you can start out by pretending and saying, I'm going to act as if this person is the one that I love most in the world. What the commentaries say is that if we can actually kind of get this into our bodies and get this into our hearts as a practice, that loving kindness will flow out of us in a continuous stream, and it'll actually wash away those feelings of anger and irritation that arise. So you do this enough as a practice, and it'll kind of take over for you, and it'll become natural. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. So this is the meditation practice itself. This is what we can do. When we want to do a loving kindness practice, we take a deep breath and gather ourselves together, and then we visualize loving kindness radiating out from us all over the world. And really, you know, you can do this in meditation, or you can do this as you're walking around the lake. You can do this in the car if you pay attention to the road. Just really visualize loving kindness radiating out. You can start with the people who are on the block or in this room, and then just say, okay, now it's going out. It's going across the continents. It's going to the opposite side of the world. It's going up into the sky. It's going down into the oceans. You know, you're visualizing it streaming out of you. And you can either do that, you know, you can use all kinds of different images. You can use rays of the sun, you know. You can use a stream. You can use a breeze that's carrying it around the world. But that's sort of the basic practice right there. The next line says, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. So we don't just do this on the cushion. We do this in our regular lives, and we do it enough so that it becomes our natural kind of go-to way of being. There's no gap. This is just the way that we are. It replaces those habitual negative tendencies that we can develop. And the commentaries assure us that this is possible in this lifetime if we do this practice. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. So at this time, that was the goal, you know, to get off the cycle of rebirths. I think in our present-day cosmology, if we aren't into thinking about rebirths, we can think about this as not creating any more suffering in this moment. Robert Aiken had a wonderful quote. He was talking about the divine abodes, which metta is the first one of, and he said that metta is one of the noble qualities of one who is no longer caged by individuality and has entered the spacious, multi-centered universe. So, it's one of the noble qualities of someone who no longer is caged by individuality. Someone who really gets it about interconnectedness. I like that. You know, we don't think about it as a trap that we've fallen into. It's more than just a delusion. It's a cage that we put ourselves into. And if we can free ourselves in that cage, we can be just like the little bird goes out into the universe. I want to end with a poem. This is by Lou Welch, and it's a poem about the Bodhisattva Maitreya. Bodhisattva being a an enlightening being, and there are all these archetypes and these stories about different bodhisattvas. And this one is Bodhisattva Maitreya. His name comes from Maitri, which is the Sanskrit of metta. So it means that he's the loving one. And in the stories, Maitreya is the future Buddha, the next one who's coming. Shakyamuni Buddha, the current historical Buddha, was from the Shakya clan. But the next Buddha is Maitreya, who doesn't come from any particular clan at all. He comes from loving kindness itself. So I think that's kind of wonderful. So there's a practice of keeping our eyes open when we're out and about in the world, kind of scanning for Bodhisattva Maitreya. You know, and everybody that we meet saying, is this it? Is this it? Can this be Bodhisattva Maitreya? And of course, you know, everyone is. Everyone is, if you're watching with the right attitude. So, if we look, we'll see Bodhisattva Maitreya everywhere. So here's the poem. This is an excerpt from it. At last in America, Maitreya, the coming Buddha, will be our teacher and will not be alone. Take it as a simple prophecy. Look into the cleared eyes of so many thousands, young, and think, maybe that one? That one? Or that one? Look out. The secret is looking out, capital O, out. And never forgetting there are phony ones and lost ones and foolish ones, know this, Maitreya walks our streets right now. Each one is one. There are many of them. Look out. For him, for her, for them, for these will break America as Christ cracked Rome. And just tonight, another one got born. We can do this. Each one of us is Maitreya, the future loving-kindness Buddha, the current loving-kindness Buddha. I'm looking at a room full of Maitreyas right now. Right now, with practice, I know that the promise of the Loving-Kindness Sutra, the Metta Sutra, is something that we can, I was going to say achieve. Achieve is the wrong word. It's available. The promise is available to all of us right here in this lifetime. So we can change ourselves. We can change our attitudes. We can change the world. So anybody else want to talk about changing the world?
Oh, I have two things to say.
All right.
There's a Japanese statue of Maitreya, and it's a famous one. In fact, it's one of the national treasures.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, it's androgynous. You can't tell whether it's a man or female. Mm-hmm. In my life, Maitreya is a female Siamese cat who's lived in my home for a long time. So whenever you say Maitreya, that's where my mind goes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very interesting from that point of view. Mm-hmm. The second thing I wanted to say, maybe more serious or something. So, it seems to me this sutra is about the ocean. And the ocean has a boundary. And above, or on the boundary, there's another element, air, mm-hmm. or something like that. So, this sutra talks about the vastness of loving kindness. And there's one word in it that hints about the boundary, and I think that word is straightforward. Because in the midst of loving kindness practice, there's also the question of enabling. And the sutra doesn't really talk about that in great depth, although it talks about a truth which is always present and which we should always honor.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Thank you.
I'd like to know what you mean by enabling. Enabling another person, or is the boundary between the mm-hmm. self?
Well, I'm thinking about people mm-hmm. in my own life who had problems like alcoholism, for instance. Mm-hmm. So a loving kindness practice doesn't mean go out and buy them another bottle.
Yeah.
Or it may not mean pick them up when they've fallen down.
Yeah, you know, the things that we need to do in life, we need to do. And loving kindness practice doesn't exclude any of them. You know? It's a whole body practice. And that includes everything that we need to do.
Hi.
I think this is timely in that we're seeing our country from federal government on down. We're getting away from loving kindness.
We are.
Splitting terribly. And it's tragic. We ought to send this to our elected officials when they start there.
There's another poem called "America Needs a Buddhist President." It was written during the Bush years, I think. But yeah, I mean, you know, you see it all the time. I every time 9/11 observances roll around, I start thinking. I always forget. Is this a Dhammapada or a Shantideva? I think it's Dhammapada. Hatred does not cease by hatred, but by love alone is cured. Yeah.